Mr. Curry. Hello, Ms. Jackson.
Good morning, Hunter.
Thank you for your time today. My name is Tom Jackson. I'm here on behalf of appellant Landon Connor Keith. This is a restitution issue brought before you to determine whether the award granted by the judge in the lower court was proper. Very quickly, the facts of this would be that Mr. Keith was involved in a single vehicle accident that killed the sole passenger, Chelsea Thompson. A few months after that, Ms. Thompson's mother qualified as administrator in Raleigh County, West Virginia. About 9 months after that, after hiring an attorney, the case was settled for policy limits. And an order was entered. There was a petition filed, just like would be here in Virginia, for approval of the wrongful death settlement.
Correct me if I'm wrong, counsel, but I don't believe an agent of the Commonwealth of Virginia is a signatory on either the settlement agreement or on the that was entered in the state of West Virginia. So how could any of that be binding on the Commonwealth with respect to the enforcement of its statute?
Well, first of all, I think if restitution means we're going to make whole someone who's suffered a loss, it's impossible to order restitution for something that another court has already ordered to be paid unless we're willing to pay it twice. And the money that came into that other settlement was as if Mr. Keith himself had paid it under
that
insurance policy.
That's a problem because, he happened to have, there happened to be an insurance policy here. But, there's all kinds of case law that talks about the purpose of restitution is remedial. In other words, the victim is not a party in a criminal case. The Commonwealth, the state is the party, actually. And the General Assembly has made a policy decision that as a condition for suspension of sentence, at least partial restitution has to be a condition. And we have case law from this court and our Supreme Court that suggests that that serves a rehabilitative and as well as a penal purpose. Not primarily to make a victim whole. In fact, in my own experience, it's rare that victims get full restitution out of these orders. Having said all of that, why does the Commonwealth care if an insurance company happens to be involved? For example, if someone burglarizes a house and steals some property, and as a result someone's arrested and sentenced, the fact that an insurance company may ultimately pay the claim to the homeowner doesn't mean that the restitution order becomes a nullity, does it?
Well, I think if it were in general terms, money was paid under some type of civil settlement without a lot of detail being provided, I could understand your concern. But I think the what makes this case different is that a court ordered these funeral bills to be paid out of that settlement. And then we turn around a few months later and appear in Circuit Court of Carroll County, and the judge orders that those funeral bills be paid again.
Why? It seems to me that the settlement provided the policy limits of $100,000 to the estate and to the mother.
Yes.
And that from that amount, she had to pay expenses related to the funeral of her son.
Yes.
She is out that money. She was entitled to $100,000, and she is out the money that it took to bury her son.
Well, sir, I thought about that, and that's a good question.
I hope so.
I was hoping that I would have an answer for that because I thought of that myself. If I were to say that Mr. Keith himself, through some financial abnormality for his age, was able to walk into West Virginia Circuit Court and pay the $100,000 himself, which I think the insurance policy in effect does that, but let's just say he paid it himself, would he then be asking the Circuit Court of Carroll County to pay the same amount again just because she had to take part of that money that he paid and pay the funeral? I don't think that's what restitution ought to be about. She, in essence, is his money twice, I think. You can say, well, it's an insurance policy. He didn't actually pay it. He's not suffering from that. But to say that that money doesn't count, or that she has to pay some of the, she has to pay those funeral bills out of that money, therefore he has to pay her again, I think is not the true essence of what restitution is supposed to be doing. That's going around to say that she hasn't, that the loss she suffered is actually that she got some money and had to pay some of that money toward the funeral, which I think is different than saying, as I'm used to in criminal court, the victim or the victim's representative sitting on a witness stand and the judge saying, so what are the damages from this offense? And they say, well, we got a funeral, we got a headstone, and we got this, and here's the bills, Your Honor, and we're asking for restitution.
Almost another way of putting that is that you can make an argument that the trial court was coming up with a way to give the family additional unliquidated damages.
There is no question, sir, that that is correct, because in the opinion that was written, ultimately the judge said $100,000 is a small amount to compensate a family for the loss of a loved one under circumstances such as this. That's a direct quote.
Because the justification was that it's to pay $15,066.26 in restitution for the funeral expenses.
Yes.
So if the funeral expenses are no more, then what you're doing is you're trying to make someone closer to whole by giving them that amount to make up for what they didn't get in unliquidated damage.
That is the essence of my argument, sir, yes. And I am not trying to ask this court to undo years of restitution theory. I am just saying that in this particular case, where you have a specific court order that says out of the disbursements, these two expenses are to be paid, and then to turn around a few months later and to say, oh, Mr. Keith, now you're to pay that again, is not under these circumstances.
Well, it's a remedy for the insurance company to go after the defendant?
Yes, it is.
But it was liability insurance coverage, so the insurance
they're not going to have subrogation.
The insurance company can't go after its own insurer.
That's correct, that's, and I apologize. That is a correct answer. And
they simply stand
in the
shoes.
I had thought through that and
insurer.
Gave it wrong. Yes, sir. That's correct. There would be no subrogation here.
Had the estate not been willing to settle for the policy limits and thought the defendant had some means by which to respond to a judgment, they could have simply rejected that offer of settlement, taken the case to verdict, and simply roll the bones on their ability to collect right. from the defendant.
And further, in regard to the comments that you just made in regard to this being more of a compensation than a restitution, the final order of restitution directs that it be paid to Judy Thompson individually. I don't know what the theory behind that is, because if everything's been paid, what is she going to do with it? She can't walk over to the funeral home and say, here's another $6,000 or $12,000. Sorry, we've been paid. So what does she do with it? She keeps it.
But she's, as I mentioned, she's already paid the money to the funeral home. She is a statutory victim under 19.2, 11.01.
Yes, sir.
She's entitled. As a matter of fact, the statutes preclude or almost require restitution.
Well, and in response to that, sir, I would, if I were certainly not of the intellect to sit as circuit judge, but if I were sitting as circuit judge, I would have said in that order that the court, having found that the funeral bills have been previously paid, and the statute requiring restitution, the court finds that restitution has in fact been made, and there's no order of restitution forthcoming in this case. Because I would have found that it was, I think you have to look at, go behind someone asking for the money and find out what the facts are around whether that's been paid or not.
I think two problems, I think maybe you can answer them, two concerns, I suppose maybe it's a better way to phrase it. But one is, you're asking us to reverse the circuit court for doing exactly what the statute required it to do. That's number one. And number two, this notion that we're going to apply tort law, essentially, to criminal law is a slippery slope that I can foresee some unintended consequences of.
Yes, sir.
Go too far down that road. So, can you address?
Yes, sir. I'll address the second one first. I don't think you could take the facts of this particular case and apply them generally to restitution in Virginia. I think the facts here are so specific and so different that this court can find that it was court ordered that those bills be paid I know from doing wrongful death cases that those checks are cut right out of the, either the insurance company cuts them or the attorney when he gets the settlement.
And that was going to be my question for you. Did you reach out to counsel in West Virginia to get copies of the checks that were likely cut by the automobile liability insurance carrier directly to the funeral home?
I confirmed that those were paid, but I did not get copies of the checks. And I don't know. I did not get copies of the checks.
Let me ask you a question.
Your first question, would you? The first question
My first question was simply, how do we reverse the circuit court for doing exactly what the statute required?
Well, here's the other side of that. If we're going to say that shall means that regardless of how many times the funeral home's been paid, you've got to order it again. That to me, that ends up being a poor public policy. That can't be what's intended by the statute.
Well, I think Judge Petty's point, at least I took it to mean, if the word shall is in the statute, the court has to order it. Now, the next question is, was it satisfied?
You know, yes, sir. That's
so
correct.
So that's the better question, it seems to me. Is there a hearing at which it's established that the court ordered restitution, that condition of the suspended sentence has been satisfied?
Yes, sir, I agree totally. And that's when I came to sentencing and we went through the first part and got to restitution, and the judge, I stipulated to the amounts, but I objected on the basis that it had been paid, exactly as you're saying.
And that's the case of Diedrich. That's what.
Yes.
If
for nothing else, Diedrich stands for the proposition that that was a reverse situation where the judge ordered restitution and then a settlement was made subsequent thereto. Judge, you need to take a look at all those circumstances and make sure that you're not double paying somebody.
If you have insurance restitution and the insurance company pays the victim,
yes,
they are paying on your behalf.
Yes,
sir. I think before we get too confused here, if the court is required to order it, your objection was, it sounds to me like your objection at the trial court level was, don't order it because it's been paid. But I think the court had to order it, so the question then becomes, okay, it's been ordered. If it's been satisfied, then it's not grounds for revoking a suspended sentence. So it doesn't come into play unless and until a court, attempts to revoke a suspended sentence based on non-payment of restitution. Then it seems to be the defense is, well, Judge, I've got these canceled checks here showing that restitution was paid, although not by my client, but by his insurer, and therefore, and then that becomes the issue on appeal, not whether or not the court, had the authority to do what it did in the first place, which is what this assignment was.
Well, at this point, I'm stuck because if I go back under that theory, my trial judge is going to say, I've already told you once that doesn't count.
I understand how that works. I've sort of been there.
Because part of your argument is not that Judy Thompson didn't pay the funeral expenses, that your client, by and through his liability insurance carrier, paid the funeral expenses.
Yes, sir, exactly.
Mr. Jackson, I'll give you all your rebuttal, but I would like to ask you this one question that came up, rose out of a previous argument involving restitution. This was a plea agreement, and apparently didn't include, I may be wrong on this, didn't include restitution as a part of the plea agreement. Am I correct on that? And the court then imposed restitution. The question that came up earlier is, are you required to try to withdraw your guilty plea, arguing that it's a violation of the plea agreement, rather than complain about the award of restitution?
Well, you're between the devil and the deep blue sea.
I understand that.
Because you're happy that you got
practice the law, and a lot of hard choices.
And that was the Attorney General's argument in the previous case.
Yeah, that was an interesting case
that
to listen
to. The defendant
to.
Wants the benefit of the bargain without running the risks.
Yes, sir.
All right,
I can't say I would have played it differently than the gentleman here on behalf of the defendant.
All right, you'll have your remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you. Mr. Curry?
May it please the court, Liam Curry on behalf of the Commonwealth. I'd like to start by just stating that the trial court did not abuse its discretion here in ordering restitution. I think it makes sense to begin with the second assignment of error first, which is this release of claims argument that somehow that it precluded the trial court from ordering restitution.
Or is that as simple as just, hey, the Commonwealth wasn't a party to that settlement, therefore it's not bound by it?
I would absolutely agree, Judge Humphreys, that it's that the release of claims language says that petitioners in the civil suit are release the defendants from future claims arising out of that incident. In a trial courts in Virginia, their sentencing order ordering restitution simply cannot be construed as a claim by the decedent or her estate against the defendants.
What if John Smith steals $500 from Jane Doe, and obviously you'd otherwise be in a position where the court would order restitution in the amount of $500, but what if during the course of trial counsel for John Smith reaches out to Jane Doe and the defendant then pays that money back? Doesn't that constrain the trial court, even though the Commonwealth is not a party to that, and prevent them from ordering restitution?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think there's a Virginia case that's directly on point in terms of what is the effect of these private settlement agreements that resolve.
But how then does the court order restitution for something that's already been restored?
Well, I think the cases that I cited to in my brief do set a limit. Those cases stand for the proposition that private individuals cannot kind of cap damages by entering into agreements between the victim and wrongdoers. However, those cases all generally hold that there is the limit to that rule is that there cannot be a double recovery, so that there can't be like a windfall of to the victim of additional funds that otherwise.
I think Judge Atlee's question that goes to the heart of this is key, and let me put it like this: If the fair market value is well known, and the defendant pays it in advance, if you will, makes it an attempt to, for whatever reason, maybe remorse, maybe just wants to look good at sentencing for the trial judge, whatever, but he pays the victim restitution prior to any order. Even if the statute says shall order restitution as a condition of a suspended sentence, is there any point when it's already been paid? I mean, would a trial court err as a matter of law in not ordering restitution otherwise required by statute as a condition of suspending a sentence when the record reflects that it's already been done?
I think the one way that the trial court could address that statutory requirement that at least partial restitution be paid is that it can order restitution and perhaps in the same order conclude that the obligation has already been met.
Well, that's kind of my question, though, is, and I know this is an unpublished opinion, but Diedrich suggests, actually states, that the restitution payment doesn't have to come out of your pocket. It can be paid as long as it's paid on your behalf.
Right.
So that if the insurance company pays the amount of restitution on your behalf, that, in effect, satisfies the obligation. Why shouldn't we do what we did in Diedrich and send this back to the trial court and ask the trial court to consider what portion of that money paid by the insurance company went to satisfy the subsequently awarded restitution?
Let me consider an answer before I respond.
That's always refreshing when a lawyer says that because it happens so rarely.
Well, they usually talk while they're thinking. And that's not good.
Your Honor, one reason why I don't think a remand would be necessary here is because my interpretation of the settlement order is that there was no specific award for funeral and burial expenses as Keith claims on appeal. My interpretation of the order is that there was a $100,000 sum that was based not on perhaps $85,000 in damages related to the wrongful death and bodily injury claims against the defendant, and plus an additional $15,000 in funeral and burial expenses.
It was not $100,000 plus $15,000 because the policy limits are going to be $100,000, not $100,000 plus expenses. So it was $100,000, and from that, the funeral home bill of $15,066.26 would be paid.
The court did order the payment, because
from the proceeds of
from the proceeds that the estate and Ms. Thompson were entitled to in full. And I believe it was Judge Petty who earlier stated that kind of a more simplified, boiled-down view of the settlement agreement is that Ms. Thompson and the estate are entitled to that full $100,000 award.
Let me ask you about that, and maybe your opponent can address this in rebuttal. Judge Petty raised this point earlier. She received this insurance settlement not in her personal capacity, but as administrator of her son's estate.
Yes.
But however, as Judge Petty pointed out, under the Code of Virginia, she's a statutory victim and is entitled to restitution in her own right. So, you know, to the extent there's a double windfall here, she's received the double windfall in two different personas. One, as the administrator of an estate, she has a fiduciary responsibility to deal with. But the other is directly to her in her individual capacity as the family survivor of a homicide victim, essentially. Correct? Does that make any analytical difference in the approach here?
Well, the Commonwealth's perspective is that there is no double payment here, because there is a chain of, I guess, the payment is that Ms. Thompson, as the administrator of the estate, pays out of what would eventually become, she was a beneficiary of the estate, and she received all the funds that were remaining once the court distributed funds to, I guess, for lack of a better term, the creditors or beneficiaries of the estate. So once the attorney's fees were paid to the attorney, and then once the funeral costs were paid, she was the beneficiary. So in effect, as the beneficiary of the estate, she would have been entitled to about $65,000. What she received was $51,000, because that amount was reduced by her obligation as the administrator to pay the funeral and burial costs.
But the defendant paid that. She agreed to that when she agreed to the settlement. So when you say she's entitled on behalf of the estate to the entirety of the $100,000, that's not what she agreed to, because contingent upon the settlement that the court in West Virginia approved was the deduction from that amount for the funeral expenses, as well as attorney's fees and any costs that the attorney had. That's what she agreed to. That was not simply a verdict or a judgment.
So if I understand, Judge Attlee, are you saying that the
defendant has paid the funeral expenses by and through the settlement through his liability insurance carrier is what I'm saying?
I guess the argument that I would make in response is would be to pose a rhetorical question. So the court ordered the distribution of the attorney's fees from the proceeds that the defendant paid to the attorney who represented the estate, Mr. New. I don't think anyone would argue that the attorney's fees in this matter were paid for by the defendant, Mr. Keith. They were paid for by the estate. And under the same theory,
paid from the proceeds of the settlement as a result of the contract that the estate entered into with that counsel.
Mr. Kirk, could I ask you a question? You triggered something.
Contingency fee.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, an answer to that last question.
Oh, sure. The way I would respond, Judge Attlee, is that there is no separate award under the settlement agreement in West Virginia for the funeral and burial expenses. They are simply listed in the order as creditors of the estate, and that the trial court sought, when it had the agreement of all parties, to settle the debts of the estate. So, what we have here is that the estate was entitled to its $100,000 reward.
Well, and there's where I quibble with you, because the estate's entitled to what it agrees to. And if it agrees to a settlement recognizing that certain proceeds would come from that settlement, they're not entitled to anything more than they agree to. What they then become entitled to, should they not wish to have those things come from the settlement, is to take the case to trial, and then if they get a judgment or verdict in excess of that $100,000, to collect the $100,000 from the carrier, who indemnifies the defendant up to that amount, and then seek to collect against the defendant for any proceeds over and above that amount.
Your Honor, I guess I just simply disagree with your argument that.
Well, I'm not arguing.
I apologize. with your statement that the funeral and burial expenses were part of the $100,000 sum that was awarded.
Weren't they directed to be paid by the out of the proceeds of that settlement by the court?
They were, Your Honor, but I do not believe. I think by that argument, by that theory, the attorney's fees and costs that were incurred by the state were also be considered part of the $100,000 award. And I don't think that there's any argument that could be made that State Farm, as the insurer, is paying for the Mr. New to have represented the estate in this matter.
Except Mr. That's the whole concept of a contingency fee award, that there will be no attorney's fees or unless or until there is a recovery, and they come from the recovery. That's something that every plaintiff in every personal injury case contracts for.
Mr. Curry, get you off the hook for a moment, but this is a question that you triggered. Does the record establish that Judy Thompson is a beneficiary or the sole beneficiary of this estate? Everybody's assuming it, and I'm trying to find where in the appendix I look to see that.
I would direct the panel to page 55 of the appendix. It's paragraph 25 of the settlement agreement.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
And you can see that the attorney who represented the estate, the funeral home service providers, and then Ms. Thompson is.
So she is not the sole beneficiary of the estate. Looks like Crystal Massey and Stephanie Thompson, the decedent's surviving sisters, are potential tributees, excuse me, of the estate.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So they paid some of this, effectively paid some of these funeral expenses as well. Came out of their share of the estate. Ms. Thompson didn't pay 100% of it.
They specifically waived, presumably because they are Ms. Thompson's children. So, I mean, I think Ms. Thompson, acting as the administrator of the estate, did pay the full amount for the funeral and burial costs.
As administrator, but not as beneficiary.
Yeah, that gets to my earlier question about, you know, does analytically, in our analysis, does it make a difference that in one capacity she's acting on behalf of the estate, and on the other capacity, she's a statutory victim entitled to, you know, certain restitution benefits under the Code of Virginia.
I think either way the panel chooses to slice it, I think she, as a beneficiary, has seen a reduction.
I stand corrected. I just saw where the Massey and Stephanie Thompson waived anything, so I apologize for wasting time on that.
Oh, sure. Judge Humphreys, to address your question, if you could remind me.
Well, you may have already, I mean, it may not matter. You answered it earlier, but if they wait. In other words, she's wearing two different hats,
sure.
It seems to me. One, she's the administrator of her son's estate, and that carries with it certain fiduciary responsibilities, but she's also a beneficiary.
Yes.
And so does it make a difference if she's also a statutory victim under the code, which is the basis for which the court-ordered restitution, you know, that's the foundation for that. So,
I think either way, she has suffered a loss to which restitution would be a proper remedy. She's either suffered a loss as the beneficiary in which her award was reduced, or she has directly paid for the funeral expenses, and the estate and her as beneficiary would be entitled to restitution payments to be made to make either her or the estate whole for the criminal actions of the defendant. I see that my time is almost up. I'm happy to answer any more questions mm-hmm. the panel may have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Jackson, you've got your 2 minutes remaining or thereabouts.
Judge Humphreys, I would respectfully submit that it doesn't matter which hat she wears, that what we're ultimately about is making sure that the expenses have been paid back in an order of restitution. And where they have been paid back to pay her again because she had two hats on is again to double pay the billings that she had that were submitted as being part of the damages of the criminal act. The order that was entered by Raleigh Circuit Court also says that not only the estate but also the beneficiaries themselves were bound by that order, if that makes any difference. It's not just the estate that was bound by the order itself. I just would like to say, Judge Petty, I agree with the intent, perhaps what your earlier question to counsel about Diedrich and why you shouldn't send this back and let the judge sort back through this again. I think that's the remedy in this case. I am not trying to change restitution in Virginia. I am just saying that in this particular case, under these very, very specific circumstances, it was improper to order the restitution that was ordered. Because we have a court order that distributes money, which I believe to be, in essence, the defendant's money, to those funeral and grave marker debts. And it's improper to come back and do the same thing again, asking the defendant to again pay those same amounts when they've been paid. What ultimately happens is that when Judy Thompson has paid those monies, she doesn't go pay the funeral and whatever as is contemplated by restitution. She simply keeps the money.
Thank you. Mr. Jackson, I think that's the first time I've heard an attorney ask us to issue a memo opinion. Thank you very much for your argument. We'll greet counsel and then we'll take up Murphy.